Good morning. It's 6:35 a.m. on July 12th, 2012. Let's see. I got my bread machine yesterday, and it really works pretty good. I was pleasantly surprised. I tried a wheat loaf first. I probably should have done a white bread first, but I tried a wheat bread. Came out pretty good, got a nice texture, a little too much crumb. I have a suspicion I'm going to need to fiddle a bit. I wasn't able to follow the recipe exactly because it called for powdered milk, for dry milk, and I don't have any. But I also know that it's not a high altitude recipe, so I also needed to adjust the liquid down or increase the solids up. Oh, done a mile. In order to account for the difference in altitude at 4,800 feet, boiling temperature of water isn't what it is at sea level. And so high altitude recipes, particularly for things that bake, are really quite important here. So it came out pretty well. Came out pretty good too. It was tasty. The crust was a little heavy. I picked the wrong setting for the crust. But kids liked it, wife liked it. I suspect it'll make good toast this morning. And while the calorie tracker seems to think there's more sodium in it than there is, yeah, not so much. So I've got a lot of things that are going into the tracker that don't have the levels of sodium that it seems to think. So that's a good idea. And the fresh bread is, that's good. Let's see what else. Let's see. Oh, yesterday on the writing front, I only got about an hour into it yesterday when I heard from Allie and she needed me to do some stuff for her, with her, to get the new website up and running. And we did that. And the new website is up. Steve Kilbride made a comment about all of the different Nathans peering out of the page. I wasn't happy when 100%, when Allie put my picture in the logo at the top. And while I understand why she did it, having it in the sidebar makes things a little bit funny looking. Now, to be fair, Kilbride's the only one who's mentioned it, and he is Stephen Kilbride after all. So, I don't know. I'll run it by Allie. I think it works good in the logo. Perhaps the answer is to take the image out of the sidebar. And Stephen, I still miss your podcast with tea. So, yeah. Anyway, let's see. So the writing's going pretty well. The feedback is coming back pretty clean. A couple of technical issues. One person has focused in on the device that's in the hold. Another person has focused on Rebecca and her weapon skills. I've made some early changes to Rebecca. And I've also done a lot of embroidery work to fill out the first third, including adding a lot more of Tanis Dreams and paying closer attention to what her various powers do to her after she's used them. So, yep, I think it's coming along nicely. I'm about to make the transition into Cleesport again, and while the initial run was pretty clean, it was pretty successful, I think there's opportunities there. One of the comments was that, and this was one that echoed something that I had thought in the beginning, but had lost sight of in the writing, and that's the rather endemic sexist nature of things in Cleesport. Now, in Ravenwood, we didn't run into this quite so much because the people in Ravenwood are escaping from that environment. And so it's not too big a stretch to consider that perhaps what their society is there is much more even-handed. Although, right in the very beginning, even Amber says, makes a comment about woman's work being tedious, often difficult, and always unpaid. So it's not completely absent there, but the reality is, in that world, in the world of the village, in the world of barter, it is primarily the same for men, where it's tedious, frequently difficult, and largely unpaid. So the point that got missed was that once they get on board ship, the women are pretty much taken for face value or at face value. Now, I thought about that in the beginning, because there's an old sailing tradition about women being bad luck on ships, but it doesn't necessarily hold with passenger vessels. And it certainly isn't something that's necessarily going to hold on Zyferior's call. Saul Groves and his boy. Not necessarily going to put up with that kind of attitude. But the other side of it is, it's not something that they've had to deal with a lot. As we've talked about in the comments, these two are the first unaccompanied women this ship has ever carried. So in a lot of ways, they haven't had an opportunity to get used to the idea that women on board ship are unlucky. It's not even a question of superstition for them, although whether or not that superstition exists in this world is another question altogether. A lot of people are making assumptions about this world of Corlay in that they're applying a lot of the ideas and ideals that come from Earth, and they don't necessarily apply. It was a good one that came back to me about Shank's Mare, which is actually a Scottish expression. And I had changed that before the comment came in, but I thought it was a really good comment. That was a kind of colloquialism that doesn't necessarily hold in this world. Now, there's a certain anatomical reality about the phrase Shank's Mare, in that shank or your leg is riding on the horse of your foot. And so shank's mirror has an anatomical component to it rather than being a reference to long shanks and his marching. Good morning. So, yeah, I'm gonna have to go look that up and see. I kind of like it, but it did sort of ring hollow for me. Some other comments about not enough actual backstory. So the references to Andy Birchwood and Dandy Andy and what they did to Tanith, what they did to the village, I don't actually go into, because I figure they aren't important to this story. They're the boogeymen under the bed. But to the point where it pops people out of the story saying, really? What? Huh? I may need to address it a little bit more. So I've added some in the beginning, and I need to do some more later on. The other comment that keeps coming up is that this, I need to go, no you don't, please stay, gets a little tedious, and I agree, and I've got some plans for dealing with that. First couple work okay. By the time we get to the third or the fourth, Tanith needs to be getting pretty short, and I didn't do that. Now part of that is because it's the realization that her empathy toward Frank's asking has a corresponding note in herself. Good morning. But the truth of it is that I think that corresponding note is going to become less and less forgiving as time goes on and the question doesn't go away. And there's a couple of passages where I think I can fix that and make it actually work a little bit better. Now the other thing I'm thinking about here is a lot of recent conversations going about in the writers' community about a Christine Catherine Rush piece where she followed or suggested her advice, don't revise. And yet here I am, halfway through my second or third, fourth, depending on how you count it, draft of this story. And I'm revising, and yet I don't really feel like I'm revising the story. I'm putting in pieces that are missing, that I thought were on the page that actually aren't. And I've taken out bits that don't need to be there. I am doing, I suppose, some line level revisions here and there, where the sentence doesn't say what I want it to say. But I don't think I'm revising what I wanted it to say, if that makes any sense. The other thing to remember is that her advice comes from writing short stories. It doesn't come from writing novels. And that the advice for short stories is, I think, pretty solid. It's trust your work and trust the reader. Go through and add the pieces that are missing or take out the parts that don't need to be there, because there's a certain amount of flail. But I think it's interesting for me because I do subscribe to this don't revise. It's the story is the story. Now, having said that, I have a double share is a really good example where I boxed the story into a corner in the first couple of weeks of writing and then had to go back through and untangle it in order to get it to work correctly, because I had it peaking too soon and at the wrong juncture in the voyage for the story to hang together. Now, as much as a lot of people really don't like that story, because they have a real hard time accepting that one of the most powerful men in the Western Annex couldn't fire a problem captain without legal implication. A lot of people find that as rather deus ex. But it's like, no, well, yeah, I see your point. Perhaps it could have been better. In fact, I'm sure it could have been better, otherwise I wouldn't have gone on to write another book. But, you know, contracts are what they are. And until you've been up against not only a contract, but a legal department whose job it is to keep you out of contract trouble, and learn exactly how much disconnect there is between what's actually on the contract and what lawyers are afraid are going to happen, that you begin to come to grips with how that book could have come to be the way it is. It also has a lot to do with systems theory, and that in order to change a system, you have to destabilize it. And so Maloney's solution to destabilizing the system was to give them a third mate that was one that they couldn't co-opt, and was one that they couldn't fold into their system. And so, in many ways, Ishmael Wong's role in that book is the same as a grain of sand in an oyster. He was meant to go in there and chafe. And whether or not Maloney would have bailed him out if he'd failed, or been able to help him if the bully boys had managed to bang him up any good, I don't know. That wasn't the story. I didn't revise it to be that, and I'm not about to now. So, interesting. Today's post, by the way, on Christine Rush's blog is about why promotion doesn't matter. And I understand what she's saying, and she's very much a product of that older day. And you know, I can see your point to a degree. They're perfectly willing to get by on one or two sales a week, five sales a month, because they have so many books in play, they can afford to do that. And I suppose that if I had 200 titles out there, I would too. But it still seems to me that the model has changed somewhat. The model is different now. The old, I don't need to promote because what's important is how many books I have on the bookshelf. Well, that's to a certain extent, that's still true. The reality of it is that people aren't going to bookstores to see how many of your spines are taking up space there. So you don't need spine space to get noticed if you substitute something else for it. And that's what she's missing. I'd write back to her, but she's got her own ideas and she's happy with them. And it's not really not really seeing the need to change her vision. For her, it's a stable system, and it has to become unstable for her to change. And nothing I say is going to make that system become unstable. So, yeah, probably not. Anyway, I made it. I expect Endomondo to tell me I've made my 2 miles here any minute. And I have. So with that, I'll say tomorrow is another day, and I'll talk to you then.